Welcome to Paper Cuts Podcast, because YA needs to hear this. I'm Ollie from New Jersey.
I'm Robin from Idaho.
And I'm Senna from Ohio.
On episode 9, we're reviewing Blood and Chocolate by Annette Curtis Klaus. We've read this one before, so time to see how it's held up over the years. Vivian, a 16-year-old loop guru, feels lost in the suburbs of Maryland. She longs for a normal life, but what is normal for a werewolf? Then Vivian falls in love with kind, gentle Aiden, a human. Moving between two worlds, she does not seem to belong in either. What is she really? Human or beast?
So, what did you guys think of Blood and Chocolate back when you first read it?
I thought, well, I actually kind of really liked it as a teenager. I like the idea of an independent girl who was a strong character. She had a lot of personality to her, in my mind. And the story was unique, because usually back then it was more vampires or a lot of realistic stuff like Rory McDaniel for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it worked for me pretty well.
Okay. Cool. I don't think I read this book until 2003 or 4, maybe 2005. It was not something that I had read when it first came out. It came recommended to me. The cover was pretty, and I was working on writing Shapeshifters, so why not? I actually avoided it for a while because of it being about werewolves, and I was writing about, like, werecats. Once I finally did read it, though, I remember enjoying it. I remember liking the writing. I was kind of put off by Vivian and kind of uncomfortable by the sex and the romance in general. Since that's not really something I actively enjoy reading about.
Mm-hmm.
I remember feeling like a lot of the characters were very, very weird. Like, I remember the adults being, like, teenagers, and yeah. So I came away from it ultimately enjoying it when I first read it years ago, probably about 10 years ago. How about you, Senna?
It's funny that you say that about the sex, because that's actually what I remember most from this book, mm-hmm. was that at the time that I read it, it was super, super hot. Like, this is, like, shit that they didn't do in any of the... I read about the same time I was reading, like, L.J. Smith and, oh, God. I don't know. Anyway, you know, L.J. Smith, the most action that they get is kissing, but, like, here they were, like, groping, and there were condoms involved, and I'm pretty sure at the end she basically has sex with Gabriel, but, like, I was like, holy shit, this is really hot. So it was one of my favorite books. But I did like the story and characters, too, but, yeah, I remember the sex.
So it seems like going into this, we all had ranging from good to super positive memories.
Mm-hmm.
So how did it hold up? How did it not? And why?
Robin?
Vivian got on my nerves this time around. I'm hot. I deserve this. Why isn't he getting me? I'm hot. That just kind of got on my nerves after a while. And then, you know, since I've got distance between what was going on in my childhood, it also just seemed like the parents are very, very young in themselves. So that kind of irked me in places. And then the sex has never bothered me, even when I was a teenager. I guess it's because I started reading adult novels when I was really young. So that's never really bothered me. And I think it progressed in a natural way. It wasn't like, oh God, you're cute, let's have sex, like I've seen some in recent books.
Yeah.
So different things that I used to like now get on my nerves. Things that I didn't like seem to be okay now, so it just kind of depends. It's kind of a toss-up for me now.
What about you, Ollie?
Vivian remained irritating as fuck. In the beginning, I found her to make a lot more sense towards the end. though she still had that, as Robin mentioned, I deserve this. Once her life actually got, you know, thrown out of whack, she felt like a much better, enjoyable character.
Mm-hmm.
The parents were more childish than I remembered them being. The characters were kind of more caricatures than I remembered them being, though not as bad as a lot of books these days that I've read. And Aiden's
douchebag.
I both love and hate him. I love how different he is compared to a lot of today's things, but, like, his clothing and his attitude, and he's just like, oh, God. And I found myself, actually, one of the good things that was that I really liked Gabriel this time around, like, a lot. So, those are my whys.
It's funny, again, I'm going to be, like, the positive person on this podcast. I don't know how that happened. I liked it a lot more than... I remember liking it, but again, like I said, the primary thing that stood out to me was, you know, it was really hot. But I was actually kind of surprised by how much I still enjoyed it, and I don't know how much of that is nostalgia and how much of it is... You know.
The books you've been reading.
Yeah, God, yeah. You know, that could be it entirely. It's better than the last fucking 200 crap ton. Anyway. I actually liked it a lot. I actually really liked Vivian. I thought it was really nice to see a confident, very sexual heroine in a YA book. I thought that was really unusual now, and I appreciated that. And I think when... It was actually the opposite for me. I liked Vivian more in the beginning than I did at the end. But I also think that's because towards the end, when she's acting the way Robin described her, like, oh, but I deserve him because I'm hot. I think the end is where you're supposed to be like, yeah, Vivian, you're really acting like an obnoxious teenager right now. You need to stop. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Now, I would say that I did not walk away from it hating it.
The same here.
Just as far as it held up for me versus my original opinion of it. I would definitely agree with the fact that, like, she's a sexual character and confident about that sort of thing, that is just fucking unheard of.
Seriously.
She knows what she wants, because she keeps complaining throughout the entire book.
Right. Aiden keeps kissing her, and I want him to bite me.
Carter, don't be so polite. Come on.
Yeah.
She knows what she wants, and I do like that aspect of it. And I can't say I don't dislike the book. It's changed for me over the years since I've read it. That's basically all I can really say about it. And I'm sure if I read it 10 years down the road, it's going to change for me again.
Mm-hmm. So we've chatted about what we liked about it now and what we hated about it now. Something we've kind of been dancing around a little bit in the past few minutes is how it compares to young adult books today. Sinna, you want to take it away?
There was so much that I noticed reading this that were kind of like, oh, that's not something that happens now. In the characters, like we've mentioned, you know, Vivian is she's very cool with sex. She wants to have it. She's, you know, she's confident in her body. It's not like the whole, oh, I'm pretty, but I don't know it. She's like, no, I know I'm pretty. She's like,
I'm fucking hot. Look at me.
Let me shake my ass and get everybody's attention. Isn't that awesome? And you're like, yeah, bro fist, you do that. And that was really refreshing. And I appreciated that Klaus didn't shame Vivian for that.
Yes.
She wrote her. I felt like Vivian was kind of a realistic teenager in that sort of teenager.
She wasn't written as a slut like they are in today's times.
Well, I mean, she was written the way people would portray a slut today, except that she was never made to feel that way, and that was awesome.
Yeah, there's a scene in the beginning where she goes out to the river by her house and she changes. And she gets naked, and, you know, Curtis or Klaus is like, she describes her nipples getting hard and her embracing the wind like a lover. So, you know, it's just like, she fucking goes for it. And I'm like, good. That was nice.
Surprising to have such descriptions in a young adult book that is like, I mean, how old is this book? 15 years old? You're not getting that kind of stuff nowadays.
you would think it would be the opposite, that we've gotten, like, less prudish as time goes on.
Yeah, well, especially as we keep having these articles about, you know, oh, young adults are so dark, and it's ruining teenagers, and teaching them bad things. It's like, no, we're getting really, like, uptight about it.
Yeah.
In some ways.
I don't think you'd be able to have a heroine like Vivian without getting some backlash.
Yeah.
And not just from, like, concerned parents, but I think from readers, too. I think a lot of readers would be like, oh my god, what a slut. She's having sex.
She wants to have sex.
She wants to have sex with a boy.
I've been reading a lot of older books lately because of, well, me being in school. Like, Stardust. Stardust has 3 sex scenes in the book.
Is it young adult?
Yeah, it's young adult.
Okay, I've never read it, so.
And then Princess Bride has 3 vague but obvious sex scenes in it as well. And they're older books. I mean, Stardust was a 99, well, maybe it's not that old, but 13 years.
And they're not just old, they're, like, classics. Like,
yeah.
I think I've seen Princess Bride on, like, the children's bookshelves.
Yeah, there's implications or downright just written it out that way. And it seems, like you mentioned, it seems like that the older the book is, the more sexual find even in YA, whereas today's, it's more like we've got to write it down so that you can't have that in there, that bad person, bad.
When I first started getting Kayla reading young adult books, she kept telling me, she's like, they keep fucking kissing, why don't they just have sex?
Do something more.
Yeah, it is, like, that line does get drawn, you know. You can have really hot kisses, but no boob touching, no hand jobs, no blow jobs, and no sex.
See, I always appreciate when there's a young adult book and they do anything between, because there's so many books where it's like the kisses, the hot kisses, whatever, and I'm like, I'm getting nothing out of this. Or it's just, like, they have sex, but it's, you know, pan to the curtain kind of sex.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fine, because it's a young adult book, and you don't need to have young adult erotica.
Yeah.
I am always surprised when there is anything in between. It's so infrequent, and it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, it's kind of like that school I've heard of. They were kind of going, well, if you talk about sex, the kids are going to want to have sex, and then
they're going to have sex.
So what happened is that they ended up deciding not to teach the sex ed classes that, you know, were common.
Mm-hmm.
So what ended up happening is that kids were getting pregnant because they were using, like, candy wrappers as condoms and they didn't know better. So that theory just kind of went...
Edumacation, people.
went out of the water for them. But if you don't address it, then how are the kids supposed to have a better idea of what to do in this area? At least in this book, you know... When they're going to have sex, there's a mention of a condom, so there's safe sex mentioning in there. It's not like they're going to go out at it and get AIDS and spread it across the entire world.
That's the interesting thing, too, because when they do have sex in the newer books, it's usually with some sort of supernatural creature, right? So they don't have to have condoms.
But why not?
Or, you know, they don't have to worry about STDs, so you still get, like, kind of the sanitized version of, you know,
you get the fantasy
real life. Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, oh, we're incompatible to mate, but we can totally fuck.
Well, you know, unless you're Twilight. But, no, because I've seen that conversation. They're like, well, what if, you know, do you have something? And he's like, no, my vampire blood cures everything. Don't worry about it, baby. It'll be fine.
Sorry, babe, I don't need anything. I'm totally not going to give you vampire AIDS. You won't get the herp at all, because my dead flesh, it just can't handle it.
it's better bareback, baby, come on.
I have waited 300 years. I am not using a fucking condom.
I had Pepsi in my mouth, Ollie.
Oh, you're welcome. You're so welcome.
But the other thing about the sex is that I can kind of understand the reluctance to include it, because I have read books where it was like reading an erotica for kids, and that creeped me out.
There is definitely a level of don't be creepy.
Yeah, like, why are you trying to get your 14-year-old readers off, author? That's really gross. But I feel like Blood and Chocolate walked that line pretty well, because, you know, it's Vivian, she's pretty generally in control, and it's in detail, but it's not explicit enough to, like, to... Anyway.
You need to go to an XXX store to go.
I guess. you know, or go upstairs, you know, whatever.
Excuse me while I take this this book into the bathroom.
I might be in here a while. But yeah, I think it did that job well, and I kind of wish that more books could take that cue.
Yeah, walk that line.
Another thing that I noticed, yes, that the parents, there are actually parents in this book.
It's a true story.
I mean, sure, a bunch of them are dead, but lots of people's parents are dead in this book because it's like a war on them, essentially.
Well, and there's, you know, they still have a presence. There's a dead parent, but there's also the living parent, and she doesn't completely check out.
Yeah, there's even mentions of her actually checking in on Vivian when she has the problems at the end. Mm-hmm. And even though she's like, doesn't want to hear it, doesn't want her help, her mom, forever how much she's basically like a teenager, every now and then remember she's also a mother.
See, that's something I really actually enjoyed about the mother's character. Like, she did have that flightiness. She was someone who, you know, who had a lot of sex, and typically you wouldn't really get a whole lot of sympathy for her, but then she also has that scene where she's with Vivian and they're remembering her father, and she's, you know, quote-unquote acting more like a typical mother, where she's allowed to be both. You know,
Which is kind of an interesting character in that kind of regard. Mm-hmm. When you look at it as she might be a mother, but it doesn't mean that she's not a person or a werewolf in this kind of way.
Yeah.
I really liked that scene with them remembering him because he's like not in the book very much, but he's one of my favorite presences in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems like he was a really good alpha.
Yeah, and that, or I like that her mom had clarity about him, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Vivian's there, like, how can you go out and have sex with other people when my dad's dead? And why can you support this new alpha? And her mom's like, I'm a woman, I still want to have sex. And then she's like,
I still want a man in my bed.
Yeah, and your dad was, he was a good alpha, but we need a different kind of alpha. I really liked the mom's character. I thought they did a really good job with her.
The only thing that really creeped me out about the parental roles was that they lusted after
the teenagers. Well, yeah. Is that an interesting thing, you know, especially with all of the older moms reading Twilight?
Yeah, well, you know, I just thought it was weird. What was her name? Regina?
Astrid?
Astrid, yes. You know, she was actually
She's, like, dating Rafe, and he's, like, he's definitely 16, 17.
He's her son's age,
Yeah, creepy.
I just find that creepy. If she didn't have a kid, I don't think it would have mattered.
Would have felt less creepy?
I would have been a little still less creeped out by it, yeah. A little less creeped out. But, you know, that was probably the one thing on there that kind of went, wait, I don't like that part.
Yeah, I mean, in general, the age gaps were something I remember from when I first read it, being like, he's 24 and she's 16.
Yeah.
This one's like 30-something and he's 16. And I'm
fucking kind of feel that way, too. Like, I might have been able to get behind Gabriel a little more if he were not basically, like, statutory raping up in this shit.
Yo.
And
almost 10 years older than her,
and I mean, the same goes for Astrid. I think if you're creeped out by Astrid, you should be creeped out by Gabriel.
Oh, definitely creeped out by Gabriel. Like, I look at it and go, if she was 18 and he was 22, it would feel way less creepy.
But he is a grown man, and she is 1 year out of 15. Like, I feel like 16 is supposed to be this magical number where you're officially a teenager, which you're officially kind of an adult, or at least you're supposed to be perceived that way. Because, like, if she were 15...
That would not be happening.
Yeah, but because there's that magical extra year, so
you're a woman
it's okay.
Now.
Yeah.
And I think when I first read it, that's another reason I didn't particularly walk away from it going, God, I love this book, because I didn't see him as her mate at all, because I looked at it and went, hey, he's so much older than her. He's an adult. She's a kid. I mean, she acts more mature, but we are also seeing that she's a kid underneath.
Yeah.
And so when that whole thing comes down with him and her getting together, I was just like, hey, slow down. How about no? And it really brought to the forefront the whole idea that these, Homo lupus are not humans. But yeah, yeah. The Lugaru, they're not humans. They don't follow our rules.
And I agree with that.
Yeah, I got more of that this time.
It's something that I really struggled to reconcile because I feel like I shouldn't have enjoyed this book as much as I did because they do a lot of really awful things.
Yeah.
They, you know, they kill people. And it's not like killing presented as a moral event horizon. No, you can assist in killing and still be portrayed sympathetically because you're a wolf and it's in your nature and blah, blah, blah. And, you
know, that was same... also interesting. The whole, oh, it's our evil side.
Yeah.
We can let it out. I'm like, whoa, I don't think that's cool at all.
Yeah, there was that whole thing in the beginning about how the five, they killed this other girl to get their wolf buddy who had killed somebody out of jail, you know, to give him an alibi.
Yeah.
And in the end, only one of the five is punished, and it's for something completely different. So you're just supposed to kind of accept
gloss over that,
because, yeah, you know, they're wolves, and no, it's their nature.
Well, they all
just
get punished.
Boys being boys.
Well, they did get punished. They just weren't killed. They were, like, thrown through, like, something that they'd... But later on, they said, I don't want to go through that again. That but it wasn't a death sentence.
Well, but it wasn't for the murders. It was for endangering the pack.
Yeah, it was for the fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, they weren't punished because they killed humans. They were punished because, you know, they got everybody in trouble. Those are very different things.
Mm-hmm.
Especially from the standpoint of the reader who, again, is supposed to roll with it. And that's where Gabriel's backstory really pissed me off, too.
With the girl?
Yeah, with the offhanded girl that he killed. And then it's like, oh, baby, I'm so sorry. That was so awful for you that you accidentally killed your girlfriend. Man, that must have been tough for you.
So hard. Be a boy. The lust after things.
I know. It's so awful that that person didn't accept you when you turned into a werewolf while you were fucking her. Man, what a
bitch.
Way
to spring it on her, you know?
Yeah, and the way they do it is he, you know, he talks about how he hit her, and then he kind of pauses, and he's like, one of our kind could have taken that blow. And it's just there to underscore, you know.
To be like, so do you find yourself frequently hitting her kind?
Not just that, but that it was, he's kind of implicitly blaming her, you know,
yeah.
Because, well, you know, it wasn't my fault that I hit her.
How was I supposed to know that she couldn't take it?
How was I supposed to know that this frail human girl that I get off on her being frail couldn't take my punching her in the fucking face?
Yeah.
Going back to Gabriel, and Vivian, I don't think their age difference would have bothered me as much if they had both been older.
Well,
mainly because my grandparents were 10 years apart, and they lived for about, 40, 50 years before my grandfather died.
They were also probably consenting adults when they got together.
Yeah. So I think that would have been a little bit different, too, about that age difference. So Gabriel, probably because of that, Gabriel and Vivian didn't bother me too much, their age difference. But it probably would have bothered someone else a little bit more because if they didn't have that grandparent history.
I mean, in general, when people are older, they may get together with people who are younger than them. I was reading something somewhere about, like, Tina Turner is 75 and her boyfriend is 40. But that doesn't mean that when he was 15 and she was, like, 50, that would have been okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's different when you pass the line of adulthood. But in this case, both Rafe and Vivian are really young. And you can see it in Rafe, too, where Rafe is actually being manipulated.
He makes me so sad. Mm-hmm. I felt the most bad for him because he was just used and abused. And, like, the whole thing where she was like, I'm doing this because you took Gabriel from me. Where? And he's like, but baby, you've got me now. She was like, but I could have had him. And he's like, but...
Yeah,
I killed people for you.
And that's actually the interesting point, because they make Rafe out to be sympathetic and being used by Astrid, whereas it's kind of the same situation with Vivian and Gabriel, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Well, you're supposed to have dirty old men, after all.
Well, but, and it's not just that, because Gabriel's pursuit of Vivian was actually really creepy to me, too, because he's really, really aggressive, like, dude. Back off. She said no. He's like, no, you'll want me, baby. I ain't gonna give up. You'll give in someday.
That's like fair.
Kind of keeps up with one of the modern
werewolf tropes. Yeah.
That's actually pretty modern.
I fucking hate that. So the alpha dude trope. Like, all the werewolves can't be held responsible for what they do or their possessiveness or their dickishness because they're wolves, man. Whatever.
Because, you know, you're ruled by your animal and not your human part, right?
Yes, that is basically it. Like, it doesn't matter that they're also human. They're half animal, and therefore that excuses
makes you crazy.
All of their behavior. And the girls really... And this is the thing with Vivian, too. Like, oh, he can sexually assault her, but she wanted it, so that makes it okay. And that is really the case, because in the end, you know, Vivian gives in because she wanted it. So, you know, all that stuff that Gabriel did that was super inappropriate and invasive, it's okay now. They're together.
I think you're swaying me on this.
I know. I'm like, see, this is why I'm saying, like, the whole thing about Vivian being super sexual and the stuff that I liked, I
it also
more than tinged. I should have.
It's also tinged with things that are still considered problems with books today.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you've also got, you know, Rafe who was groping her and she had to twist his balls to get him to let go, and the guys just kind of found that amusing.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't have ever had to get to that point either.
Yeah.
Well, and that I can kind of take because...
She did defend herself.
Yeah, and it was
being portrayed
as not good. Sorry, go ahead, Al.
It just reminded me the idea of her defending herself.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I did not like, and I typically do not like, is Vivian is fighting Astrid at the end. You know, she had previously fought her in the Bitches Dance.
Mm-hmm.
And for, you know, trying to protect her mother and took Astrid's eye. And then Astrid's all like, "Wah, you took my eye and you took my man, skank ass hoe." And so they're fighting. But then at the end, for a second time, Gabriel comes in and he stops it and he passes judgment on Astrid and he kills her.
Mm-hmm.
For a book that everyone is doing all of this killing and things like that, I feel like Vivian was kept really clean. And also that, like, her agency was taken away in that regard. That I can see where him passing judgment on her is, it makes sense from a Wolfpack standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I also look at it and go, she's been accepted as alpha. She's been accepted as queen. Doesn't she have a fucking right to just be like, I'm gonna fucking kill you now? I mean, even if she doesn't herself accept that she's the alpha female,
mm-hmm.
no one would pass judgment on her if she was like, this is what happened.
Yeah, well,
I just wanted her to do that, you know? Because all that she doesn't, I don't know if she chooses much of anything except to be with Aiden in the beginning, and that causes all the trouble. You know, I mean, I guess she chose Aiden and she chose to protect her mother. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, most of what she does that actually matters. Because choosing Gabriel and choosing her werewolf life, I don't know if that's really her choice because she was kind of pushed into it.
Yeah.
I also kind of found the whole Gabriel pulling her off of a fight kind of anticlimactic. I was kind of wanting to see her kill her.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So... It just kind of ruined the flow there for me both times when I read it when I was a teenager and now.
You're like, yeah, fight! It's happening!
Fight!
Adventure!
Fight!
Action!
Win! Kill him!
No, the man's
I mean,
stepping in and solve all even, the problems.
I mean, even Aiden got a chance to kill someone, so why couldn't she?
That's right.
Actually not something that I noticed. You're right, that's fucked up. I did like that mm-hmm. Vivian went in and really fucked Astrid up to save her mom.
Yeah, right?
I thought that was pretty great.
I think that's, like, the highlight of the book. And I'm not saying the whole book is bad. I'm just saying that was the highlight to be like, oh, and no, she didn't.
I know, like, right in the eye, too. And she's, like, ripping off her muzzle and stuff. She's like, oh, no, you don't touch. And the best thing is that
it hurt my mom.
Was not actually over a dude. It was pointedly not over a dude. It was about saving her mom.
Yeah, and I think a lot... could have been in that book with the mother more. I'm a big fan of that kind of thing. So, like, that was an awesome scene. Of course, the Astrid and... Is it Esme, the mom? Yeah. They were fighting over a dude who was, like, half their age, but still. Mm-hmm. Vivian was not.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that, again, kind of bothered me. Like, they did slut-shame the crap out of Astrid...
Dude, and, right?
And she got down on her mom, too, about Gabriel and Kelly.
Yeah. Mom, he's half your age!
Well, half your age, you know, that's... I mean, I can see a daughter being upset about it, definitely.
Well, yeah, and that's the whole normal teenager stuff. Like, Mom, you're embarrassing me.
You're like, oh, stop it. But there was slut shaming on everyone who wasn't Vivian.
Yeah, and the teenager, Kelly, too. She did mm-hmm. that. Yeah, that was, and like, was that, so close. Kelly? Aiden's not girlfriend.
Yeah, one that... The alpha bitch, in a way.
Kelly.
Yeah.
Okay. She was good. I couldn't remember her name. Yeah, I was going to say, Vivian and Kelly both kind of switched roles there in, as alpha bitch. One literally, one figuratively, but still. they both kind of switched roles in there because it starts off with Vivian kind of going, yeah, I got him. He's mine. And you can't have him. And then Kelly's kind of like, well, I stole him from you. Not really, but she doesn't know anything.
Ever. And the great thing is that Vivian has that moment where she's in her room and she's fucking up her stuff and she's like, I'm going to fucking kill you. And then she's like, wait a second. She didn't actually do anything that I wouldn't have done. Why am I doing this? And it's really great because I think you're supposed to latch on to that. Because when Vivian actually does decide to keep fucking up her shit, it's over something freaking ridiculous. She sees the necklace and she's like, oh my god, he gave her my necklace?
Yeah.
And she, you know, she freaks out. But there is that moment where, you know, you're allowed to have that sympathy for Kelly, who's just being a teenager.
Just a teenager, yeah. Those things happen. It's very nice to have that sort of plot line exist of just, oh, well, yeah, I guess I'm not meant to be with him currently.
So she both agree that they did this in the right way for that case?
I think so.
Briefly.
Yeah.
Briefly, and then Vivian flipped her shit. But her room, too, because she's seeing it, and it's pink wallpaper, but it's all got, like, black stuff thrown over it. She mentions how the pink sheets are still made up, probably by a loving mother, but the teenage girl, you know, has black stuff all over it. And I'm like, that sounds like a teenager, you know? This is giving me insight into this character who would normally just be like a stock bitch.
Yeah, that we would have absolutely no idea. I mean, because that immediately gives you history. And yeah.
So, you know, clap, clap.
So, with the mention of the age differences on these things, I wish it had not come across as creepy. I feel that there could be ways to do that sort of stuff and not be creepy. That the older woman or the older man can be more than just a cougar or a creepy old man, that I would really enjoy seeing it done in a way that is not super fucking creepy. I feel that it should not probably be done in young adult.
Probably not.
That, like, new adult is where I can draw the line on it. Because I still won't encourage any older, like, men or women to be chasing after 14-year-olds.
And to not normalize it for teenagers. Like, you really shouldn't in real life have a 24-year-old guy hitting on you. That's not cool. That's not an accomplishment.
Oh, yeah.
As for YA, I can't read it and not be creeped out. Even if the guy is super cool, it's just like, dude, no. She's like 16, even if he's like 20 or 21. It's like, now go find a girl your own age. Let's not encourage this.
Yeah, the idea of, okay, so she's super interesting right now. She could change. You could change. She's going to want to go do stuff. Don't. I look at a lot of them and think to myself, you're going to just tie this girl down to a certain life. And she's not going to be able to do all of the fun, amazing things that you like about her.
Yeah.
So let her go for a while.
Yeah, it's sad face.
So do we think, after discussing all of, like, how it compares to today's books, which seems like in a lot of ways it still has some similarities, but in a lot of other ways it's like, what? Why isn't anything like this happening anymore? Do you guys feel that this could be published today? What do you think the reaction to this hitting the market would be like? The quality of the writing, etc.
I don't think it could get published as a YA. They might want to have the author push up the age and try to sell it off as a new adult. I think it would be really tough for them to get it sold as YA in this market.
Maybe it wouldn't be as big as it was.
Yeah, not as popular. It certainly wouldn't have a movie based on it.
I really don't know, because I think that the way the market is now, a lot can get published. And I feel like this is good enough that it could still make it out there. I don't know how popular it would be, or if it would be picked up by mainstream publishers. What about you, Ollie? Do you think it could have been published now?
I can see, in a way, agreeing with Robin the idea, and also because of this, the discussion that we have been having, that the publishers might ask for the character to be older. It might be really interesting to see it as a new adult book with them in college and not high school, where perhaps Vivian is going to college and the five are just slackers and one or two of them might go to school, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. So it would be really interesting to see it as a new adult book. There's a lot of things that it does, I think, up to and including her looking at herself in the mirror, which a lot of it reads really old school style young adult, so it would probably need a little bit of work, but I found the quality of writing to be pretty good.
I agree. That's actually something that I wanted to mention, because in comparison to the stuff that I read a lot nowadays, I think Annette Curtis-Klaus is so much a better writer.
Yeah.
It's not like purple prose, but there's some nice turn of phrase in there.
Descriptions, yeah.
It's very concise, but it's very well written, and every scene, it builds. You don't really see that so much anymore. It's like stuff happening, and then the end. But here you get, you know, every scene has a purpose in the plot, but it also builds character, and it's like really, really good, well-crafted writing.
Yes, and I feel that even just like just on that alone, it would get picked up.
Yeah, you get the feeling that whatever she's writing, Annette Curtis-Klaus knows what the fuck she's doing. And yeah. That's not a feeling that I get with a lot of YA authors. I feel like some of them are just like, well, I read this in a book a lot once, I'm going to do this.
Yeah, you can find a lot of books that, for me, feel just like a ton of dialogue. And this mm-hmm. didn't shy away from giving you long moments to enjoy the descriptions of a scene or a character and what was going on and how people were moving. Now, maybe that was part of the whole werewolf thing, but it works.
Yeah.
Well, I like the realism to it because, you know, she goes, well, I can smell urine and I can smell this and that and this.
Yeah,
and
like a rabbit's urine or something. It doesn't feel crass.
And it adds a little bit to detail, it adds a little bit more to a world, and it also kind of lets you know what she's capable of doing in human form, mm-hmm. which I think is just very, very good, because nowadays you're kind of like, well, all I can smell is baked bread, but I'm supposed to have the smell of a wolf, so I should be able to smell from 3 miles away, but all I can smell is the baked bread in this house.
I can smell how sexy this girl smells. That's the extent of my powers. I really like the way that she wrote the wolves, too. I felt like they acted like wolves even when they were humans. Mm-hmm. There's one scene where Vivian gets snuck up on by one of the five, and they describe her kind of pouncing on him, and as they're rolling, she bites his leg and, you know, puts herself in the position to where she's kind of dominating him. And she fucking bit his leg. She's in human form, and she's just like, fucking bite. Like, what the fuck are you doing, you know?
Her instincts are still always the same.
Yeah, and they describe the way the five move and the way they behave and talk, and it's just, like, this is one of the books I've read where it really feels like these are actually wolves, but in mm-hmm. human form.
Yeah, I liked it. So I think we're looking at, we feel that this could be published today, probably with some changes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Stamp that one. All right. So, there was also a movie, as has been mentioned, that was made loosely based on this book. I saw it when it first came out in theaters back whenever that was, 2006, 2007? Maybe it was 2007.
2007.
Yeah. So, but the two of you saw it actually today. So, you have a much stronger memory. I have only the memory that I didn't like it because it was not raw rage fan being pissed off, not the book. Go ahead. What tell us about.
There really was nothing similar to the book and the movie except for the character names.
Yeah.
The roles are completely different.
Motivation.
The ending is completely different. Location is completely different.
I do remember that. Wasn't it in, like, Europe?
It was in Romania.
Romania, because they're vampires.
Right? That was pretty much the entire idea, because the werewolf mythology was built into the city.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, watching it today, it seemed like there were some good ideas in the movie. It was definitely not a good adaptation. I don't know why they used the name. It seemed like...
Yeah. Do you feel they probably could have just labeled it something else?
Yeah, I feel like it might have started out as a straight-up adaptation, but, like, 50 million rewrites later, it just morphed into something else. Because, I mean, just as a movie on its own, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Hmm.
Yeah, there's, like, in the movie, the rule is that the alpha male finds a new wife every 7 years.
Even though he has a child with the woman that he's supposed to be leaving for Vivian, who is Vivian's age. So, obviously, he's not 7 years old. Not sure why you built that rule in with that time frame when it clearly doesn't gel.
Yeah, his son's, like, 18, and...
His actual son, or is it, like, his adopted son?
No, his it's his actual son.
Maybe they mated once before or something.
Well, but the woman is Astrid, they kind of merged Astrid and Vivian's mother into one character. But she says, why are you doing this? You know, you could change the law if you wanted to. And mm-hmm. he's like, no, it is the law, blah, blah, blah.
But so, I don't want to.
Yeah. So, like, either he clearly threw aside the law at one point when he mated with her, or nobody saw that.
I mean, at oldest, he could be 14 because it's the second female. He could have been born the very first year the mother and the father got together, and that would have given him about seven years by the time that they got separated, and then 7 more years for this new mate that he has. So at oldest, he's supposed to be 14, but they have him at least 18. He might be a little older than that in the movie.
It's Rafe, so
yeah,
he's
that's even creepier.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing is, they still have that weird kind of pseudo-possessive vibe with Rafe and Vivian. Mm-hmm. He's still kind of all up in her biz. And it's like, dude, you are actually cousins.
Gross.
Yeah, well, you know, Gabriel is after Vivian, and they're niece and uncle.
But that's not, so, they're not blood related, though.
I thought that it
Which
was
Which means her- that you can get that published on Amazon.com.
He was Vivian's father's brother.
No, Astrid was her mother's sister. Or her father's. It was definitely Astrid who was related to her.
Boy, this just sounds like it was a clusterfuck.
It really was. Yeah, Aiden is a graphic novel writer, but he also has a tragic backstory, which makes him a fugitive. Killed his father.
Wait, what did he do?
He nearly killed his father.
Oh, noes.
His father was abusive, so sad face. But the thing that I noticed was that for Vivian being a very distinctive character who had a lot of personality, the Vivian in the movie is a fucking wet rag.
Really?
She is nothing but sad the entire time. She has no...
No strength of personality?
No. She's got no interest.
Everything she does is... Based on the fact that she supposedly killed her entire family when she was 6 years old.
Wow.
5, 6 years old.
You don't even find that out until very far into the movie, and it's supposed to be, like, the reason why she refuses to rebel against her creepy uncle who's trying to get up in her biz. But the rest of the movie, she's just like, pout, pout, pout. I'm gonna... arbitrarily run away from this dude, but then I'm gonna like him or something, I don't know. And she, basically everything she does is in reaction to what the dude
Someone
did
else
with her. Yeah, she's got no agency.
Oy. So, don't watch the movie if you like the book.
Don't watch
Either that or don't like expect movies. The movie. Or don't expect the movie to be anything like the book. If you
want
to watch it.
Aside from that, it's just really kind of a boring movie. And Aiden's a douche. Aiden's a douche in every single fucking, like...
There's no good way to have Aiden.
No, he's just an asshole.
Yeah, he kind of plays stalker for a while, and then he finds out what he is, and then he blames her for not...
Yes! Oh my god! He literally chases after her down a street, and then goes into her place of work and goes behind the counter and fucking stands there and refuses to leave until she accepts a date. And then he finds out that she's a werewolf, even though she's done nothing to hurt him. And he's like, you should have just never met me. Yeah.
You should have left me when we met.
You should have never
let me. Well, I tried.
It's like, yeah, she fucking ran away from your ass.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so Aiden's a douche. And at the end, they run away together, even though he's a douche. I don't know.
This one, Hollywood. He eventually does accept what she is, but I think the only reason they do is because her family tries to kill him, and she saves him first.
So wait, is it, like, well, so they make it a Pocahontas werewolf movie?
Kind of,
yeah.
So glad I don't remember most of this.
We will fill you in, Ollie.
he kills Rafe because Rafe attacks him, and he tries to run, but they catch him before he gets out of the country. And so they try to do a wolf hunt, basically have the entire pack chase after him and try to kill him. And Vivian manages to save his ass. And that's only when he seems to go, oh, maybe you're not so bad. I can handle this now.
Perhaps I can.
Not only does she save his ass, she saves his ass. He then cuts her because he doesn't know that she's Vivian. Like, he's never seen her shift before. Which, by the way, is the other thing. Like, in the book, she's shifting back and forth. She loves being a werewolf. She thinks it's fucking awesome. In the movie, she shifts at the very end just to save Aiden. And later on, they try to kind of retcon that, where she's like, well, I love being a werewolf. It's not about the hunting. It's about the running. And it's like, if it were actually about the running, we would have seen you as a werewolf before now.
Yeah, like, the original synopsis on the bag is just, like, how she relishes the change, the sweet, fierce ache that carries her from girl to wolf.
Yeah.
It's like, that's Vivian.
Yeah.
And that's not what happens in the movie. In the movie, it's like, boom, big flash of light, and run.
Yeah, you're a wolf. Don't actually shapeshift. They just sort of litter.
Oh, no.
They're pre-Twilight vampires.
Yeah, okay, maybe glitter is not the word. They kind of do a house effect, strobe light kind of deal.
Oh my God.
It's very magical.
Magic. So. Yeah, they have two of those hunting scenes in there, and Gabrielle says basically the same exact thing right before both of the hunts. So you kind of get that, come on, let's get on with it. How does he get out of this trouble? So it slows it down in areas too.
Yeah, and the very end is supposed to be, it's supposed to be the moment when Vivian comes into her own, because she kills Gabriel to save the asshole, and, yeah, whatever. She kills Gabriel, and they have this really weird stuff that they don't ever develop about how she's some sort of prophesied something who's going to bring an age of hope to the werewolves, and supposedly that's the reason that Gabriel is using to excuse his wanting to be her mate, but it's also kind of not true because he tries to have Aiden killed just out of possessive jealousy. Anyway, so at the end, it's supposed to sort of be her, like, actualization. She's making her own decision. She's rebelling against her family. She's doing the action girl fighty stuff. You know, they win the day. They get in the car. They're driving out of town, and all of the wolves, and apparently they're just, like, fucking everywhere, because they're driving down the street and random people are just kneeling down and are showing her their neck, and it's supposed to be like this, yeah, I'm the werewolf queen, what? But she looks at Aiden and she's like, so, where are we going?
Oh.
It's like, what? You're the fucking werewolf queen now. Why the fuck do you need to go anywhere? And why are you asking this human stalker douchebag? And he's like, well, I think we'll go to the Age of Hope. LOL. I mean Paris. And that's where the movie ends. And it's like...
Oh, God.
Anyway.
I'm so glad I didn't try to find it and watch it again.
Next time.
Ugh. When I'm really, really bored, I actually own it, so I can put it in. But
don't torture yourself.
I haven't seen it in a long, long time till today, and I was like, oh, that's why I don't remember this movie.
Right? Sounds like.
I do think the casting for Aiden and Gabriel was good. Vivian was kind of terrible, but the other two were pretty decent.
I do think that Gabriel and Aiden, if they had actually kept closer to the book, even a little bit closer to the book,
mm-hmm.
would have been perfectly cast for the book.
Yeah, the dude who plays Aiden, they talk about it in the book, how he has, like, floppy hair, and he's kind of gangly and gawky, and I'm like, yeah, that's Hugh Dancy. Sounds about right. And Olivier Martinez plays Gabriel, and he's pretty. So.
He looks too old, but pretty.
You know, he is supposed to be Astrid's age in this, so.
Yeah.
But he has, like, that body type, and he's, you know, he's cute.
Yeah.
So, I'm like, yeah, that could be Gabriel. That works.
Well then, at the end of the day, where do we stand on the book? Is it worth the read if someone hasn't ever read it before? Is it worth the reread if someone has read it?
I think it is. There's issues with it, but there's always going to be issues with the book. There's no such thing as a perfect book. And you can, like, if you're a writer wanting to improve your craft, you can go through this book. This is what I did when I was in eighth grade. I read this book for the first time, and I did some major plagiarism. I also broke
the book. It's called internalizing, Robin.
Okay. I broke the book up and tried to figure out how to make a book similar to it. So it's a very good learning book, and it's also just very entertaining if you just want it for entertainment purposes as well. How about you, Senya?
Robin, we need to chat with you about this pronouncing stuff.
It's always the one.
Senna.
I don't know. I really, really liked some of it, and then I really, really hated some of it. And I, like I said, I feel like I probably should not have enjoyed it as much as I did. But then, you know, the good stuff is just, like, so refreshing. It's hard to not appreciate. What about you, Ollie?
I feel that if someone hasn't read this book before, I would probably not encourage them towards it unless they were looking for a werewolf book. If they were looking for a werewolf book, I would definitely recommend it. But I would probably more recommend people who have some sort of history with the book to reread it rather than make a new book relationship. Because, as you said, the things that are wrong with it are difficult, but I feel that... Well, I guess if anyone who is listening to this podcast, they probably are the kinds of people that I would want to recommend it to.
Yeah.
So the kinds of people that I recommend books to who are, I want to say, like, super discerning, like, not even the way I am or you guys are, you know, like, those kinds of people are the people that I hang out with, so it's hard for me to recommend young adult to them, because there are so few really fucking good ones.
Yeah.
But that people listening to Paper Cuts would probably appreciate the good. Probably read it and be like, oh, man, yeah, totally, that thing. And I see all of the problems that they were talking about, and haha, I laugh, it's totally funny because it's true.
Yeah, as long as you don't go around internalizing the shitty stuff, we should be good.
Yeah, I hope that people who are listening to us are a little smarter than that.
Yeah, please, you can go ahead and internalize the good stuff. That's great. Do that.
Yeah.
Especially if
you're writing, as Robin mentioned.
Yeah.
follow the good trope, subversions. Don't go with the bad ones.
I guess if we're talking in terms of recommending, I still would. I think there's enough good there to warrant it. Just don't fall for the domestic abuse apologia. Don't do that.
Would recommend with serious footnotes.
Please read the asterisk.
Right. But that's okay, but not just asterisk, hand the book over to someone and being like, this, read this. This is so good.
Yeah.
But more, you could read this. You might enjoy this. Here you go. This is why. This is why not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah. Basically listen to the podcast, then read it.
Then read it, even though we probably give away a lot of stuff.
It's still worth
it. And the writing is really good.
It is.
That alone, you know. All right, ladies, any final statements or conclusions on our Blood and Chocolate podcast?
I was just curious, why do you think it was called Blood and Chocolate?
Well, I can actually quote from the book on that one.
Well, it has that quote at the very beginning, but other than that,
no.
What would make you think it was called that?
No. Gabriel bit her lip, and she gasped and captured his mouth again with her own. Hee hee. He was raw and sharp and rich and throbbing with life. Winky blinky. He was sweet blood after a long hunt. How could she have mistaken Aiden's kisses for this? They had been delicious and smooth, like the brief comfort of chocolate, but they had never been enough. Sorry. Aiden is chocolate, milk chocolate, and Gabriel is blood.
Yay, metaphor.
So does that mean her werewolf side wins?
Yeah.
That is completely irrelevant title in the movie, so much so that she works at a freaking chocolate shop just to work it in.
Fucking stupid.
Well, Astrid in the movie does give the quote at the very beginning of the book, in fear I hurried this way and that, I had the taste of blood and chocolate in my mouth, the one as hateful as the other. She does say that during one of the big humongous gatherings.
Yeah, let's just throw a really quick title justification in there.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, we all seem to have mixed opinions about blood and chocolate, but I think it's okay to read it, especially if you've read it before. You can get a lot of different information out of it, different theories, things along those lines. But to avoid the movie at all costs.
Yeah, avoid the movie at all costs. We're going to wrap up today with our new and notable books for June 2013. These are books that we have not read, but whose synopses we found intriguing.
For the month of May, we're recommending The Elementals by Sandra Mitchell, a YA paranormal romance.
The Girl Who Was Supposed to Die by April Henry, a contemporary YA thriller.
And Insomnia by J.R. Johansson, a YA supernatural thriller.
These titles caught our eye. We hope that they'll catch yours.
If you check them out, be sure to leave your thoughts in the comments.
That wraps up Episode 9 of Paper Cuts Podcast. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Paper Cuts Podcast. You can find Ollie at oliviahennis.wordpress.com, Robin at robinconnolly.blogspot.com, and me at ykmreviews.blogspot.com. See you next time.